We at the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program recognize that regardless of who you are, growing up can be tough. We believe that sharing stories helps us realize that we are not alone in it. Through a project entitled Moments of Hope, we will bring you stories of resilience and pieces of advice to help you navigate the waters. First up, San Diego's crankiest drag queen, Miriam T. Aspen Gay Ski Week is the oldest annual gay ski week in the nation. But it's not just a party. It's also the annual fundraising event for Aspen Out, a local nonprofit focused on anti-bullying and tolerance for the LGBTQ community. This year, Gay Ski Week added multiple drag performers to its long list of event offerings, including Miriam T., a drag comic from San Diego with a more than vibrant history and personality. I sat down with Remington, the artist behind Miriam, to discuss drag, how Miriam came to be, and what advice they have for LGBTQ youth here in rural Colorado. This is Miriam's Moment of Hope.
What is drag?
Well, drag is different for everybody, I think. I would say, if you start back with how it started, drag is Shakespearean shorthand for dressed as a girl. Because back in the day, women were not allowed to be in the theater, so all roles were played by men. Because it was a prestigious thing to be in the theater, and back then women were not allowed to do prestigious things. So then that's how the term drag queen got started. But drag is it's a very inclusive term. There's all different kinds of drag queens and drag kings and drag performers. But for me, drag is playing dress up and yelling at people. Because I'm a stand-up comedian and a show hostess. Drag is a really cool way to explore a side of yourself that is traditionally harder to express. So my drag character's name is Miriam, and she is certainly an extension of who I am from my everyday life. She is like this little caricature that lives in my brain. Really, the only realm that can bring her out is drag, and because drag is bigger than life and outside the binary and outside the box and outside of general everyday, you know, the walk of life. Drag is beyond that. That's the only way she can exist. So that's, I guess, drag for me. Hopefully I answered that question.
For those who don't know, What is the binary? What do you mean when you say the binary?
So binary, we're in a really great place right now in communications of sex and gender. We live in a world where there is a binary system. There is male and female. And to live outside of that binary of men only do this and men only wear this and women only do this and women only wear this, drag messes that up. Drag kind of changes that and shakes that up, because I am a biological male dressing up as a woman and playing with these things. You know, back in the day it was very taboo, and for a lot of people still it is very taboo or wrong or whatever. So the binary system is that male is male and female is female. And that very same sense of, like, in the nursery, boys are blue and girls are pink, that kind of thing. So drag is definitely shakes up the binary system. So I technically consider myself a non-binary person. I don't really play by the rules of anything. I just am my own person. And drag has really helped me understand my own, like, confusion with gender and sexuality and stuff that I had growing up. Drag has been, like, that missing piece. It's like, oh, it all makes sense now. Yeah.
So you talked about your drag mother.
Yeah.
Who is she, and what is a drag mother?
Yeah, so I'm lucky. I have an actual, like, legendary drag mom. She's known all over the country. Her name is Glitz Glam. She's been in the biz for over 20 years. She used to be, like, the queen of Florida. I mean, yacht parties for millionaires. She was being flown all over the country back in the 80s and 90s when, like, that wasn't a thing. Like, you know, she's done parties for Madonna, Dennis Rodman, like, she's done it all. So a drag mom is someone who, well, it varies. So I'll give you a little bit of history. Drag houses started in Harlem. in New York during the AIDS epidemic. Trans kids and kids that were doing drag and gay kids were like literally being disowned by their family and being kicked out on the streets in Harlem and stuff because homophobia is rampant, was rampant then, especially in families of color. It's still a huge problem. You can research a lot about the studies of like religion and homophobia and stuff within communities of color, and it's a big problem for our LGBTQ people in families of color. We're dealing with a lot of people being disowned and things like that. So back then, these kids were being thrown out on the street, and these usually trans women started creating houses. So they were literally taking these kids off of the street and putting them and living with them and being their actual mother and teaching them street smarts, as well as they were inducted into their drag house. Because back then were the famous balls. So balls is where voguing started. Voguing was created by trans women of color. And so it's an art form of dancing, and you would compete for trophies. So you had the houses of La Beija, House of Desire. You have all these different houses. And primarily they were made up a lot of kids that were disowned and thrown out by their families. So families in that sense, like big houses with like decades of history, are really prevalent in New York City, Florida, and Texas. So my drag mom, we met and we clicked, and we have such a similar style. And she just kind of was who brought me onto the scene. I was already well along in my drag development. A lot of times you get a drag mom very early on. You know, you're starting out, you're doing gigs, you're doing competitions, you're working for free. An older drag queen will see you and be like, hi, I really like what you do and I think I could help you. Would you like to be my drag daughter? And then you're kind of inducted into those families. A little bit different with my scenario because I had already been doing drag for quite a while and was, but my drag mom, Glitz, we're just really good friends. And she really brought me onto the scene and opened up a lot of doors for me. Where a drag mom will a lot of times give you advice aesthetically. Here, let me teach you how to make a hip hedge. This hair is not big enough. You need to take that off. Hers has been more business side. Hers has been, you're big enough now. You need a contract. You need to be asking for more money. You don't need to put up with this. So drag mom just kind of teaches you. Not everybody has a drag mom. Not everybody has a drag family. But yeah, that's kind of how a house and family work. But I love my drag mom. She's great. Look her up. She's a fantastic drag queen. A legend.
Let's turn our focus back to you and your path, your journey. You talked a little bit about how when you were younger, you felt a feminine side, but that you weren't trans. But can we get a little more detail on that? What was your process of becoming a drag queen?
Oh, that's fun. So I always tell people, I started drag when I was 4, which is kind of serious. So when I say I always had a feminine side, I mean, my parents were really cool. As a 4-year-old boy in Arkansas, I only played with Barbies. I had a Barbie Dreamboat. I had a my size Barbie. My grandmothers let me put them in makeup all the time.
A my size Barbie?
Yeah.
That sounds kind of terrifying.
Yeah. Do you know what those are? They're like the 3-foot Barbies that you can like dance with and stuff. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. It's okay, good. They're a nightmare. you know, I used to put my grandmothers in makeup. I would like paint. I remember one time painting my grandmother's birdhouses with mud and glitter. Like, I was gay. Like, G-A-Y, gay. And I do have a distinct memory of being, like, 4 or 5 years old. My mom used to have this old VHS recording of a Reba McEntire concert. So that's not gay enough to start off with. Anyway. And she did Fancy, and she did a reveal. And she, you know, she went from a black dress to a red dress. Well, my gay ass found a red beach towel, and we had a black fleece blanket, and I did the lip syncing in my dining room. I put the VHS on in the living room, cranked up the television, and lip synced for my mom and my dad and my grandma and my grandpa. So I tell everyone that was my first drag performance. So for me, it kind of started out with my parents were really cool with everything. And then as I got like in school, kindergarten, first grade, 5, 6 years old, then it started with, they kind of started pulling those away and trying to, you know, now we're in school, now we're in public life and blah, blah, blah. So I went through a state of confusion where I was allowed to play with all of this stuff and there were no questions about me. But now I'm being told boys have to do this and girls have to do this. But they tried to get me into sports and I never wanted to do it. There was not really a good theater program around at that time. So for several years, I was just kind of stuck. My outlet was like church plays, and luckily I was in like a gifted and talented program in school, so I got to do a lot of artsy creative projects with that, thank God. I was even the outcast in my gifted and talented program. It was kind of funny. Like, I was an outcast in school because I was weird and like, I just didn't fit in anywhere. I was a small farming town in Arkansas of 25,000 people. I just never really found my spot until high school. In elementary school, the notes I always got, the feedback I always got was, Remington always brings the highest production value to his projects. You know, his stuff is always, compared to the other kids, it's just over the top, big. You know, I remember doing, we had to do a project on 9/11. And it was supposed to be about the planes. And so I gave you as little information as you could about the planes. And I turned mine into a radio drama where I was a radio host interviewing widows of people that had passed, wrote all these parts for all these people. And I created sets of the crash site. I remember I went to like landfills. It was like a movie. I made a replica of the plane and I recorded it flying in, but they would be like, but he doesn't get down to the actual educational technical. He's only interested in the artsy fartsy stuff. That was always my feedback. He's so brilliant, but we can't get him to get to the educational stuff. He only wants to focus on the ooh and the ah, and that was always my critique. And that was always my frustration with my parents growing up, is my dad, you know, you only want to do stuff if it's fun. The second it doesn't get fun, you lose interest. And I never, ever understood as a kid why that was a bad thing. Because as an adult, what I live by is, if it's not fun, I'm not doing it. I say no to gigs all the time. Luckily with drag, I mostly only get cool gigs. But I'm like, if it's not something fun, like, I don't want to do it. And so as a kid, I mean, I got that yelled at me hundreds, even up until high school. You're never going to make it. No one's ever going to take you seriously because you only want to do the fun. You're such a hard worker, but only until it's not fun anymore. When it's not fun anymore, you quit. And I just never freaking understood why that was a problem. Because to me as a kid, I just have always had an artist brain. So luckily I had that outlet, because without that gifted and talented program, I think I would have been totally screwed. So growing up, I think I started realizing that I was gay. As an adult, I can look back and see things as early as second, third, fourth grade. In fifth grade, I remember having feelings of confusion and whatnot, but I don't think I knew what gay people were. I didn't know any gay people. I didn't know. So I didn't start really feeling it until like seventh or eighth grade. You know, when the change of life starts taking over and all of that. I came out in 10th grade. I tried to come out in 8th or 9th grade. I tried to come out as maybe bisexual. That didn't go over well with my family. It turned into one of those we need to pray about it things. And it was never spoken about again. And then when I came out in 10th grade, my family was like, yeah, duh, we know. And everybody, there was like no drama. And I was just sick over it for years, you know? Just like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to do this. And everyone was like, yeah, you had a Barbie dreamboat. We knew, kid.
What do you think caused that shift for them?
My parents always knew. I mean, Barbie dreamboat when I was 4. And I just think the couple years difference, my family was in a different place. And honestly, the political climate has shifted so fast. And I just continuously got gay or something. They were like, oh, this isn't gonna. I mean, they were catching me playing in makeup in like high school. So the drag started in high school. RuPaul's Drag Race started. And I was always enamored by Ru. And then when the show started, I was like, oh my God, I have something in this town of 25,000 people on television, and I can go home and I can watch it. I remember sitting in French class in 10th grade and my friends telling me, you're going to be a drag queen one day. And I was like, ew, gross. No, I just love watching it. I was like, I love watching it. I don't want to be one. Oh no. And here I am, 6'4" clown, and it's my job. I'm a full-time drag queen. I've been lucky enough to travel the other side of the world doing drag. You know, I'm here now. It's crazy. So I just think in my past life, I must have been a drag queen or some fabulous old Yiddish woman with a lot of money and really tacky taste. And it just carried over, because I've been pretty gay and pretty draggy since I was a kid. I've just always been. We'll be right back.
did you find Miriam?
I love the story. Okay, so if you don't know, most drag queens are either Halloween queens or Pride queens. Most drag queens either start from a Halloween or Pride. Now I'm gonna let you guess. Do you think I was a Halloween queen or a Pride queen?
Oh no. I think Halloween.
Okay, ding, ding, ding. Yes, I was a Halloween queen. Not every drag queen starts with Halloween or Pride, but usually it's a great gateway.
Yeah.
So me and my friend Claire at the time, we were broke, and I worked at this little cafe, and I was 19, I think. This is back in Arkansas, and we had a friend who was having a birthday / Halloween party. We had very little money, and we procrastinated. It was like the day of, and we wanted to come as something matching, or it's complimentary. So we went through, Santa Claus, Mrs. Claus, and we were at the Goodwill. We both found these velvet tracksuits. Both in our sizes. And we used to do these voices of these Yiddish bubbas. Oh my God. Oh my God. And so I picked up these tracksuits and I looked at Claire and I go, oh my God. And she was like, are you serious? Oh my God. I was like, I'm serious, bubbala. What shall our names be? I'm thinking my name is Mariam and your name is Yetta. So we bought those velvet tracksuits and fanny packs at the thrift store. Then we went to Claire's really rich grandma's house and we raided the house and we filled up our bags. We had like a Fleet enema, a bag of prunes, senior vitamins, a casino membership card that's around the neck. We wrote down stuff. We did these things in unison. And so people thought that the costumes were so fantastic at the party. And they're like, Remington, that's my biological name is Remington. And they're like, Remington, why don't you make YouTube videos? My town did Rocky Horror Picture Show the next week and they were like, bring Mariam. And I was like, okay, so I dressed up as Mariam again. And it was, people were just like lining up to take pictures of me. It was the funniest thing. And they're like, you've got to make YouTube videos. So I started to make YouTube videos. And that lasted for like a year or two. I still never considered Mariam to be a drag queen then. I was very much like Eddie Murphy and the Nutty Professor, Tyler Perry and all of his. Like, Mariam was supposed to be like this actual Yenta in the Bronx. Like, I only smoked Virginia Slims. Like, blah, blah, blah. And so something wasn't clicking. So I kind of stopped. And then I moved to California. I didn't bring any drag with me. I moved out to California to be a stand-up comedian and an improv actor. I mean, I did that for a couple of years, and then I started missing drag. So then I was like, okay, let's bring Mariam back, and let's see what's going on with her. I tried to redo her look, and that took almost 2 years, and I wasn't really going out. I was making some videos here and there. It was just a lot of practice at home. I almost just gave up. I was like, this isn't working. I never thought that I could go out and perform as Mariam. There's just something in my head was not clicking, because I'm like, she's just supposed to be this little caricature. Well, I was doing stand-up for a couple years, I was really good at it, and I was having a great time. I wasn't making any money. But then I had one of my friends who I did stand-up with. He was like, hey, we're doing this big gay fundraiser. It's a paid spot. Would love for you to do stand-up. How would you feel about doing it in drag? And I was like, hey, you know, I kind of thought about that. Why don't we try it? Because what I'd been doing a couple years before that was I would do stand-up for a little while, and then I'd be like, oh, I miss drag. So I would quit doing stand-up and then try to go back to drag. And then I'd be like, well, this isn't fun. And so then I'd quit drag and I'd go back to stand-up. I was just chasing my own tail. I wasn't getting anything done. And then it was like the planets aligned, or the universe was like, hey, idiot, why don't you take these two things that you're really good at and do them together? And seriously, from that moment on, I'd quit my job and I was full-time drag queen. It was crazy.
There's just so many opportunities.
I couldn't keep up. It was literally like one of those things, like the universe was like, hi, we've been waiting for you. What took you so long? And I had to go through those trials of really figuring it out. We as humans, we just overcomplicate everything. The universe was like, hi, I've given you these two things that you're really good at. You keep messing around. Just combine them, idiot. So I've only been doing Mariam, what I do now, since July of 2017. And so we're now at January 2020, and I'm being flown to Aspen to do drag for a week. I was on tour in Australia for a month last year, and things that I would never think of, opportunities that I've gotten to do, people that I've gotten to meet, experiences I've gotten to have, would have never thought drag could have taken me there. But it's really freaking cool. So that's kind of been my process of discovering her. And she's obviously evolved a lot. She's very glamorous now. What's great is I have found my tagline is I'm San Diego's crankiest drag queen. I am an insult comic. I am an adults only viewing. I am an R-rated comic. I am loud, rude, crude, in your face kind of girl. But then I get to kind of get to offset her and dress her all floral and flouncy and cute and adorable. I've made Miriam everything that I want. And now I've really gotten to explore a lot of myself through drag too. Mm-hmm. And pick and choose which parts I give to who. Which is cool. A lot of people that don't do drag don't get to experience that. So it's a really cool opportunity to do drag. To kind of get to bust out of your box and recreate your little life.
So in your process of becoming Miriam, of becoming the star that you are today, what kind of obstacles did you face?
Money. My Venmo is Remington-Kindbush. Always taking donations. I mean, obstacles. Obviously, the biggest obstacle, it was myself. I fought doing drag for a very long time. I've always known I wanted to be a performer, but I didn't think drag would take me where I wanted to go, to the levels that I wanted to go to. Turns out I was completely wrong. Biggest advice I can give somebody is get over yourself. Humans stand in our own way so much. I was bouncing back and forth for years between doing stand-up and drag, and then all it took was one time me doing stand-up and drag. 6 months later, my life completely changed. I was a full-time drag queen, making my living from entertaining people. Making a living enough that I could afford a one-bedroom apartment by myself in Southern California. You know, within 6 months, like, my life completely changed. If you're thinking about doing drag, you gotta get over the fact that everything is expensive. Another thing is, if you're thinking about doing drag or getting in the entertainment industry, you gotta start getting ready. It's hard. It's a lot of work. The amount of money, time. You know, I'm working on a really big project right now that I can't talk about. Just an example. Friday night before I got here, I slept for 4 hours, got right back up. Saturday, I took a 20-minute nap. I was up for 39 hours working on something. I took a 20-minute nap, and then I slept 4 hours before my flight here. You know, each one of my outfits, on top of paying to get it made, I spent 14 hours rhinestoning it. One outfit. One outfit. Drag, there's so much time. I'll do events like this, where I'm being flown out and like put up in a hotel and everything paid for, blah, blah, blah. And people will be like, so what's your job? I'm a drag queen. Yeah, but what else do you do? But I'm a drag queen. Oh, you make a living doing that? Yeah, probably a lot more than you. Like, people, and they don't mean it condescending. That's just any artist. So you have to get used to people being like, oh, you're a drag queen. Mm-hmm. And that's a struggle. So yeah, so there's some of the obstacles. You know, my family wasn't crazy about me pursuing drag as a full-time job. You know, that's got to be scary for any parent. I'm going to dress up as a woman and talk to people on stage for a living. Sure, kid, have fun. But here I am doing it, and it's cool. I love it. So yeah, but I'd say the biggest obstacle for most people is going to be yourself. Get over yourself, people.
And see what's on the slab. I see you shiver with anticipation. But maybe the rain isn't really to blame.
What kind of advice would you give for young LGBTQ kids in the Roaring Fork Valley, in rural Colorado, in rural places anywhere?
You have to stay true to yourself. And it's going to sound so cliche. It does get better, but you have to make it better. It does get better. It's not going to get better if you're just passively. But please remember that high school is fake. And most of the people that are bothering you, if their people are bothering you, are at their peak in their entire life right now. And you are going to go on and be something queer and fabulous and amazing. If you're in a small city, I highly recommend doing whatever you can do to get out. Whatever place you go to, go out and experience other cultures and bigger cities. There are things that you don't even know about, and people with ideas and feelings that you're even unaware of. There's just a whole big, beautiful gay world out there. So if you're, you know, I came in from a very small town. I think if I would have stayed in that small town, I can't imagine. I always recommend people, if you're in a very small place, make plans to get out and spread your wings. Moving is hard. You know, I'm a crazy person. I dropped out of college in my third year, sold everything, bought a one-way ticket to California. I couldn't do it anymore. Be authentically true to yourself and listen to that voice in your head. It'll save you years of screwing around and not doing anything. If I would have listened to the voice in my head and done stand-up and drag, who knows where I'd be today? I've only been doing this a couple years. If I would have listened to it when it started, who knows? So I say, just listen and reach out. There are so many resources. And educate yourself. Go and watch these documentaries. Go watch gay movies. Learn about our rich history. Learn that you're not alone. If you're in this small town and there's nothing gay to do, we have the internet. You have videos. If you don't have a gay bar to go to, if you don't have a drag show to go to, if you don't have a pride parade to attend, I understand that. We're in the age of the internet. You know, if your family is unaccepting of who you are, wait it out until you're old enough to make your own life decisions. Not everybody is going to be lucky enough to have a family that accepts them. Don't get hung up on that, because you're going to find a new family that is beyond anything that you thought. I'm fortunate enough that I have a really supporting family, but I have a lot of family, my sisters, my friends that don't. But they have such a huge, beautiful support system. And that's out there for you, too. So if you're in a not safe space, keep your head low. Reach out for help. Go to your public library. Read books. Hop onto their computer so your parents don't find your search history if you're at home and you're scared and you need more information. Talk to your counselors. Talk to, you know. And then when you're 18, get out. Get out. Go somewhere else. We think that we're smarter than we are sometimes. When you just step away from something and put yourself in a new environment, you just get slapped around, and in the best way of like, oh, wow, life is different and there's all these options. So, yeah, there's a whole big, beautiful world out there that you can see and meet so many people that are like you. And shoot me a message on Instagram. If you're stuck somewhere and you feel alone and stuff, follow me on Instagram at TheMariamT and just shoot me a message. And I'll probably yell at you and tell you to get it together and stop crying. But hey, at least somebody will be there.
So I'll remove the covers. But not the symptom.
It's she, her, me, Miss Mariam T, and I'm known as San Diego's crankiest drag queen.
Support for this project comes from Aspen Out. Aspen Out is the nonprofit that brought Mariam to the Valley. Learn more by visiting aspenout.org. This has been Hallie Zander for the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. Visit azyep.org for more moments of hope. Thanks for listening.